I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about a fresh push to support Indianapolis's cultural districts. We'll talk about what it is, how it works, and what it means. My guests are Scarlett Martin, Indianapolis Administrator of Community and Economic Development, Chris Gall, Vice President of Marketing with Visit Indy, and Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Michael Huber. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about Create Indy. It's a fresh push to support Indianapolis's cultural districts. We're going to talk about what it is, how it works, and why it's needed. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are a couple of veterans of the program, Chris Gall, who is Vice President of Marketing with Visit Indy, and Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Michael Huber, and a newbie, Scarlett Martin, who is the Indianapolis Administrator of Community and Economic Development. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Scarlett, I promise this isn't the equivalent of hazing, but we're going to start with you. ask you to talk really about what this new push is, how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So the city of Indianapolis has supported arts and culture for many years through a couple of different initiatives. We continue to build on the legacy of former administrations that have supported the Arts Council and their annual grants program that primarily supports visual and performing arts organizations. We also have been supporting Film Indy, an initiative that lives under Visit Indy, and Chris may speak about a little bit later. And then in the past, with Mayor Peterson, we actually supported the Cultural Development Commission, and that's what really started the cultural districts. So building on that kind of legacy, Mayor Hogsett saw this gap in our emerging cultural sectors, so film, music, food and beverage, design, these kind of emerging sectors in our economy that really needed that extra kind of push to really elevate them. And so Create Indy recognizes this umbrella of programs that we have supported for many years, but also launches two new grant programs. One of those is Create Indy Fund, and that is small grant programs for new innovative projects towards those cultural sectors that I just mentioned. And the second one is specifically for strategic planning in our cultural districts. So to make sure that going forward, we still have the momentum and the assets in our cultural districts to make sure that visitors and residents alike see those as key places to go in our city.
Chris, Michael, why is this as important as it is? Chris will start.
Well, we as a capital city, welcome more than 28 million people from around the globe each year. And we know based on research, by the way, that's an all-time high, 21% of those visitors are coming specifically for our arts, museums, cultural attractions, music, theater, et cetera. And so we stand to grow by virtue of this reinvestment and doubling down into our cultural districts. We also know, based on visitor feedback, that these enclaves, these cultural districts where visitors and residents alike collide and interact, is where our visitors are seeking out. They want to step foot in Mass Ave. They want to saunter along Indiana Avenue and learn about the culture of Indianapolis. And so we can't sit idle. And we know that these grant-making programs will help ensure that we continue to race ahead of the competition. And Indianapolis competes with other major cities each and every day, talent attraction, talent retention, and for visitors. And our cultural districts set us apart. and help us attract visitors from all over the world. So we are happy that the tender, loving care and attention that these now, 10-year-old cultural districts, 10 years ago they were put in place, will continue to be enhanced through Create Indy.
Michael, I want to pick up on something Chris said. Who are the cities that we compete with in this area? Who are we vying with?
So if you look at measures like job growth, in-migration, overall economic growth, here's the good news is Indianapolis has emerged from the field of Midwestern cities in the last 10 to 15 years, and we're looking more and more and more at Nashville, Tennessee, Denver, Colorado, Austin, Texas. Columbus, Ohio is doing very well as well. So we're happy to be in that tier. And what's exciting about these efforts by Mayor Hogsett, I think of three specific things that come to mind. And you've been kind enough to have me and others on the program talking about the changing nature of economic development before. Number one is that if Indy wants to compete with those cities I just named, our ability to retain and recruit a diverse workforce is so, so critical. And the arts has the ability to bring people together and cross cultural and generational boundaries like almost nothing else. Music, visual arts, this sense of place, reviving the history of places like Indiana Avenue. So bringing people together in a way that we have not done before as a city, and building off of organizations. I mean, we would have to acknowledge literally dozens of organizations and people who have been setting the table for this for some time. Secondly, to compete with those cities, there's something about becoming known as a city where creative people can thrive. It's just a thing. We had Richard Florida, who's become a friend of the Indy Chamber, speak at our annual dinner last year. And so it's also not by accident that a lot of the most talented people that we're trying to grow and retain and recruit from other places are also themselves artists. I mean, how many software developers and, you know, medical professionals do we know who are creative people? And so it all works together with the kind of talent retention and attraction that we're trying to do to compete with those cities. And then finally, what's particularly exciting about the Create Indy is that a lot of these organizations that really factor in this conversation are businesses, and there's a lot of them are small businesses. They're rock venues. They are record stores. They are upstart, concert promoters and visual artists really trying to make a living in Indianapolis. And this, especially the Create Indy efforts, are going to help us bring more and more of those talented individuals and businesses to the table in a way that we have not done before.
Scarlett, how do you hope that this will transform the way the city looks and operates?
That's a great question. I think this is such a new program, the concept behind Create Indy in particular, because individuals, businesses, and nonprofit organizations are all eligible for this grant. I think it could take a number of different forms. We're offering $50,000 total in two different rounds, so $50,000 round one and $50,000 in round two.
So it's $100,000 total.
$100,000 total, that's correct. I think what we hope to see is new people in the sector, new people in arts and cultural sectors being able to participate in civic leadership roles, for example, bringing neighborhoods into the mix, being able to elevate our music producers, our artists, our filmmakers in a way that they have not been able to do before.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Create Indy. It's a fresh push to support Indianapolis's cultural districts. If you want to join the conversation today on No Limits, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I talked with Michael, obviously, about who we saw as our competitors here and the tier that we've moved into. Are all of these competitors doing things that are this aggressive in terms of enhancing arts and cultural possibilities within their communities, or are we at the vanguard here? I'll start with Chris on that one, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts.
No, we are competing in many cases, punching above our weight class. Having said that, with a caveat to Michael's point, a city like Denver, in which we'll visit collectively as a city under the Chamber's Leadership Exchange Program, is exceptionally excelling at in this in mm-hmm. this area and avenue. We compete daily with Austin to win convention business. We're competing with Nashville for visitation, Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit, many of which don't have these concerted efforts, or if they do, they're not. It was a one-time push, and now it's sitting idle. So again, where this is different is uncovering those very authentic Indianapolis artists, musicians, restaurateurs, chefs, venues where arts and cultural amenities are present, but maybe not as big as they should be, and giving them seed money to prevail. So I think Indianapolis has done an extraordinary job, and kudos to Mayor Hogsett for picking up past mayor's baton and running with the arts and cultural initiative that is Create Indy. At point of perspective, mm-hmm. 3 years ago we launched Film Indy. Mm-hmm. 400 production companies reside in central Indiana. They're currently filming commercials, reality TV shows, online documentaries, major motion pictures outside of Indianapolis. So this concerted effort, Create Indy, will also help these independent filmmakers who are based in Indianapolis bring projects home, keep projects here, and film within the capital city. And that will create jobs. We know there are more than 800 jobs now that have been created through this initiative, and Create Indy will help that, put a light on Film Indy and help that grow even more so. But to answer your question, we've done a great job, and this will help continue racing ahead for Indianapolis.
Michael.
Yeah, I agree with everything Chris said. And yet we hear it all the time. There's a greater intention and focus that I think if we want to compete at a higher level that we need to bring. Chris mentioned the chamber takes 110 business leaders, civic mm-hmm. leaders to different city every year. A few years ago, went to Nashville, Tennessee. And Ralph Schultz, CEO of the Nashville Chamber, is a really good friend of mine. He tells a story. He says, Nashville did not consider largely country, its country music mm-hmm. industry as an asset until the early to mid-1990s, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's taken for granted. Now, then in the mid-1990s, there was a concerted effort to embrace all of their talent, their music assets, and say, let's make this a part of a bigger thing, which is about creative people coming to Nashville. I think the three of us have all been on kind of a process of discovery here in the last couple of years about Indianapolis' own assets. The history of Indiana Avenue and Indianapolis was definitely a top jazz city in the mm-hmm. in the 1950s. At some point, we lost a little
and
bit
before,
of that. Right,
well,
and before, right, yeah. right. And now we've got organizations like Jazz Foundation, APA, trying to bring it back. We just had a hip-hop festival, Treese, which just got us a fourth year of being on the national radar for hip-hop music. And that's not to mention all of these amazing institutions that we'll probably have time to mention later on in this conversation. There is a sense that really the mainstream of the city embracing it and tying it all together in the way that Nashville did and other cities, it does have meaning, you know, mm-hmm. creating these relationships, having the mayor specifically mention the Treese Hip Hop Festival mm-hmm. at Friday's Start With Art Luncheon is a big deal. You know, you've got hundreds of people there who may not be familiar with it. So I think all of us, you know, kind of know what we need to do in our own roles to start to see if we can help break down those silos. And the nice thing is, John, we're not talking about some aspirational thing we're trying to be. We're talking about somebody we already are. We're talking about organizations and assets that we already have.
I've known Joe Hogsett for more than 30 years. I'm struggling to see him doing hip-hop right now.
As long as he doesn't dance.
You can say that.
I think to Chris and to Michael's point, the Create Indy Fund could be an opportunity to really elevate and attract these types of projects that are already kind of bubbling up and growing. We know that we have the kind of talent here in Indianapolis, and we just want to be able to support that. So we're excited to see how that goes.
And, you know, if people want to apply for one of these grants, how do they go about doing it?
So my.indy.gov, there's, if you search Create Indy Fund, there's a link and a Get Started in green button on that.
How long is the process? Is it, you know, is it something where they fill out one form and then they wait to hear, or is there an interviewing vetting process? How does that work?
So they fill out the form. It's relatively short. And then the deadline is September 17th. Awards for the first round will be made in October. And then
so
the second
quick.
Round. Mm-hmm,
so
it's quick.
It is quick. And how many applications have you gotten so far? Do you know?
I don't know yet. We've got some folks helping us vet those. But there's a lot of interest. We're getting lots of calls and emails about it.
And what criteria will you use in the vetting process?
So we're working with IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute to build a rubric. We've also got a committee that is mayoral appointed that is helping us make those decisions.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Create Indy. It's a fresh push to provide support for Indianapolis's cultural districts and continue to Indianapolis's work to become a cultural and economic power in the Midwest and beyond. My guests are Scarlett Martin. She is Indianapolis Administrator of Community and Economic Development, Chris Gall, Vice President of Marketing with Visit Indy, and Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Michael Huber. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about Create Indy today on No Limits. It's a new push to support Indianapolis's cultural districts. My guests are Scarlett Martin, Indianapolis Administrator of Community and Economic Development, Chris Gall, Vice President of Marketing with Visit Indy, and Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Michael Huber. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So we talked about the fact, you know, there's certain things, and I think Michael kind of alluded to this when he talked about Indianapolis's forgotten jazz history. There are two ways I want to go with this. One is, you know, in some ways, like Nashville, the country music scene, it was the country music capital of the world long before the city fathers awakened to that fact and decided to take advantage of it. It already had established that identity. In Indianapolis's case, we struggle a little bit to create that sense of identity. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how we go about doing that. And two, that kind of moment of epiphany that Michael was talking about in the 1990s. You know, I'm thinking about when Chris was alluding to film Indy, and I remember we did a show with John Green a few years ago. It was right before The Fault in Our Stars, the film, had come out. And literally, it seemed like every fifth question was, why wasn't that filmed here? Mm-hmm. What the moments were that awakened us to the fact that we were letting these opportunities slip by. I'll start with Michael on the question of how we, since he raised the subject first, of how Indianapolis establishes an identity.
So our friend Michael Kaufman comes to mind. I think he's been on the show. He runs he oversees community outreach for Health and Hospital Corporation here in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Also ran a successful record label for several years. Manages other artists and music. I think you're right. How would we go about creating this creative, artistic, perhaps musical identity for Indianapolis? It's something we can build off of for our economic development, right? And a few things come to mind. So, in the broad sense, we have 2 million people. We have one of the most diverse bases of R&D and engineering and technical jobs here in Indianapolis as we do in the country across life sciences. So think Lilly, advanced manufacturing, which is becoming so much more automated, Cummins, Rolls-Royce, Allison Transmission, tech, especially marketing tech, agriculture and ag tech, and sports. Add motorsports to professional sports, NCAA. That's a really diverse base for a city of 2 million people, and how many people would know that by the message we put out there? And now that's a marketing challenge, I think, for all three of us that we all embrace, and that's just part of it. Now, how do you improve that story in a world where retaining and attracting creative people becomes really, really, really important? And it's while it's hard to draw a comparison to, like I mentioned, Nashville in the 1990s having been this country music capital, but you take that diverse group of kind of companies and industries, all of which need creative people. You look at the jazz history of Indiana Avenue. You look at this kind of rock and roots rock community, growing hip-hop community highlighted by Treese. The fact that we punch above our weight with our symphony orchestra, we have the elite violin competition and piano competitions in the world here already. We have the Music Crossroads Initiative, which is truly one of a kind in the world. You put all of those things together and you start to kind of draw these lines, John, and it's like, okay, we're right there. And this is just my opinion. I think it has something to do with we produce stuff here, we make stuff here, mm-hmm. and we commercialize it and we grow it. And somebody more creative than me is going to would have to come up with sort of a tagline or a very simple language. But that's why part of Create Indy is so exciting. When you put it all on a map, you can see the pieces there. One of the elite music institutions in the world is just an hour drive south of where we are today. And so that's why we think that taking that step is well within our grasp when you start to think of all those assets. Now we just need to focus and tie it together.
Mm-hmm. Chris, could you speak a little bit to the whole epiphany, the lost opportunities until, you know, I'm assuming that was part of the genesis of Film Indy. And
you're exactly right. So, you know, the state at various times has had incentives in place to help filmmakers, major motion picture, LA-based shops film in Indianapolis, film in the state of Indiana. That had been sunset and is still. In fact, the state of Indiana is one of only 11 states that does not have a film incentive in place. And so we spent a lot of time studying that and lack of state incentive, and the city of Indianapolis decided to establish the first ever city-level film commission. And we've had great success with, again, TV commercials for Honda and Ford and AT&T. We've had sports documentaries. We've had American Ninja Warrior, Man vs. Food. But to get the John Green projects, you have to have a state-level incentive. And so that's still the case. When John Green has a new book and it's largely about Indianapolis and the look and feel of Indianapolis, the financiers of that project can't in good faith select Indiana and Indianapolis to do those shots because there's not a 30% incentive, let's say, on hiring locally or employing locally or using local locations. So that's where we're still missing. But Film Indy and through Create Indy is to shine a light on what's already being done. The creative class that's here that's doing film-related projects all over the country but happens to be based in Indianapolis and showcasing the city through that effort. But until we have state-level incentives, and again, we're one of only 11 states that does not, we'll lose out on those bigger John Green-esque like Fault in Our Stars. It'll go to Pennsylvania, and they'll recreate Funky Bones in another state.
Or all sorts of Indianapolis landmarks are suddenly hit. Have hills in them, and where's the?
I tell you, back on the branding piece, sports has been our calling card. What's nice about Create Indy and some of the tangential benefits is that it, in a very authentic way, shines a light on our arts and cultural scene, mm-hmm. which we know as residents has caught up with the sports scene. But to a visitor, to someone outside of Indianapolis, John, the perception is sports and sports only. Mm-hmm. Even though Visit Indy and other sister organizations work with a sense
and
of urgency.
And amateur sports, really.
And amateur sports. We are so much more than our famed Indy 500 cars in a good way. So Create Indy will help put this marketing light on the authenticity of culture. And that's appealing if you're marketing a city because we want to continue to enhance that brand.
Scarlett, is Create Indy enough or is it just an opening bid? I mean, is it something that really we need to do more of? Because we're talking about $100,000 kind of in seed money to get this going, but I can't remember what the budget was on A Fault in Our Stars. But, even a modestly budgeted film like that is in the $40 to $60 million range, which is a huge economic impact for a community.
It absolutely is, and this is definitely just seed money, just getting started. I think we hope to prove proof of concept here with the Create Indy Fund and with the Cultural District Grant Fund as well. I think something that Chris said has really stuck out to me is that arts in Indianapolis have always been connected to the sports strategy here locally. So starting with the Pan American Games, the Pan American Arts Festival was going on at the same time. And that's come out time and time again. We've hosted these major sporting events. The arts community has come alongside. The Arts Council does the Welcome Race Fans initiative every year, where artists create those posters. Just time and again, and I think that's something that that's a true opportunity for us to elevate what it means to have arts alongside our sports strategy. They shouldn't necessarily have to be separate.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Create Indy. It's a new push, relatively new push, to support Indianapolis's cultural districts. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named M.A. has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. M.A., you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I recently moved here from Denver, and I'm an artist, so I'm very interested in creating a scene in Indy, something like the First Friday scene in Denver, which on South Santa Fe Street and the Rhino District, it is mobbed with people shoulder to shoulder on First Friday visiting a number of art galleries. And what that does for the galleries, for the artists who show there, for the local bars and restaurants is amazing. And I don't know how that could be translated into something for Indy, but I think it's something to think about. And yeah.
Well, thanks very much for the call. And
does anyone have any feedback for me?
I'm going to toss it and get it from all three of them. Thanks very much for the call, M.A.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the I don't know if the caller M.A. has in terms of what role she can play in bringing this great experience, from other cities. But the Arts Council at 9th in Pennsylvania is a great has an outstanding service center for creative people, for artists, and that's a great place to start. Another thing that she mentioned, we've got a growing First Friday community here. It's better and more dense than some cities, and not as dense as other cities. And one of the things that the Create Indy initiatives, including our Music Cities, which is a part of this, will address is, and it already is, are barriers to making different venues successful for music and for the arts. We have identified a number of, on paper they might be mundane, but they're meaningful barriers that especially if you're a club running concerts or events, liquor licensing, some details in the liquor licensing laws that provide some challenges. And so there's a coalition of us working on those kind of regulatory issues that we hope, if we provide some focus and attention, are going to make it easier for venues to be creative. In terms of other resources, though, I'd defer to Scarlett and Chris.
So, and I think the spirit, obviously, MA is talking about, Denver has a really vibrant, the Rhino District, which you referenced, is fabulous. Are there other cities or communities that we look to either as models or inspirations? In this work, there's no point in reinventing the wheel. If somebody else has done something that works effectively and it can be transplanted here, probably should be. Are there places we're looking at now, Scarlett, that to transplant those kinds of ideas?
Yes, a number of cities, including Denver, have their own cultural strategy that has included these types of initiatives. We don't have such a cultural strategy, but I think this is really kind of jumping in with both feet with Create Indy. Denver is one of those. Chicago also has that. Nashville, New Orleans, Austin, kind of all these cities that we've already mentioned that have this very vibrant arts and cultural scene that they're known for both residents and visitors. Denver, we are actually talking to the folks at Create Denver in terms of modeling our Create Indy program. They've been extremely helpful, and similarly, they are a partnership of convention center, chamber, city of Denver in that case. So we're really looking to them for leadership and an example as well, because they've done some interesting things.
Other ideas, though, that just won't transplant, would you say, Chris? I mean, some, you know, like trying to establish any place but Nashville, saying we're going to be the country music capital of the world, is would seem to be an effort doomed to failure.
Yeah, you know, again, it's about the authenticity of your marketing. And to your point, John, if it's not believable, it won't stick, and you can't drive that visitation. And I say to MA, welcome. Mm-hmm. We're glad you're here. Think about that, other listeners. Someone from Denver's relocated to Indianapolis. I think sometimes as residents, we're bashful. We don't think that someone would want to relocate to Indy as we might to Chicago or Nashville or Austin. Our First Fridays is climbing, but has room to grow. And again, Louisville is mm-hmm. is really doing a nice job with packaging its arts, and moreover, rallying their residents to say, you should be prideful of this, you should attend this, and you should tell others about this. That's your best marketing effort, is when residents understand the breadth of your arts and cultural offerings. You know, have we sauntered into Fountain Square to the Hi-Fi to see a show? Do we go to Jazz Fest as local residents? Are we exploring the culture of these cultural districts with family and friends and visitors in tow? That's going to be our best effort to claw market share away from other Midwest cities, other national cities, mm-hmm. to help grow the arts and cultural and music scene here by virtue of people seeing is believing when it comes to Indianapolis, especially arts and culture.
We've gotten a Facebook comment from a listener named Amanda. And again, if you want to find us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Amanda writes, I think there is a sense of disconnection between the cultural districts in Indy. How do we work to create unification between the cultural districts and the various types of arts working within the city to create a stronger reputation in the arts in the city? Also, how do we get our citizens to value and support our arts and culture scene in a similar way they value and support sports? I'll throw that one to Chris first.
Well, again, it's no surprise that with a professional football team and basketball and WNBA and minor league sports rules, it's in our DNA. It's part of our brand. We're getting ready to have the Brickyard 400. We're a sports-centric city. We shouldn't hide behind that. However, we need to diversify our portfolio. One of those ways, to Amanda's point, and I'm glad she brings it up, is for residents to share their wealth, not only with season tickets and how they entertain, but for the corporate community to think about how they're entertaining using our arts as a place to host and for business development, et cetera. But we as residents have to first appreciate what we have in the breadth. We think about the international violin competition. We think about the level of artists that are already doing work here. We have to embrace that as a community, and I don't think we're to a point we need to be as early adopters, residents, to help uplift the arts and culture community and diversify our own home portfolio with supporting sports and arts.
Is it tough, though, Scarlett? I mean, many artists and artistic creative types tend to be individualistic. You know, part of Amanda's question speaks to how do we get them to play and work more nicely together and more effectively. Has that been a challenge?
Well, artists are competing for similar funds, so that's challenging always. But our cultural district program in particular acknowledges that each of the cultural districts are in different places in their development. They have different needs and they have different opportunities. So I think right there is an opportunity to really seek out what it is that can push them forward in the next several years and both preserve and promote arts and culture. Our Create Indy Fund is also an opportunity to collaborate. That's our number one thing that we're seeking in that grant program is collaboration. And so I think infusing new funds into the arts and culture scene, even though it's just seed money, will really help us see that kind of working together that Amanda's talking about.
Michael, we're running up on a break, but I think the other part of that is the very diversity of our cultural scene can work against us at some level. I'll tell you what. That's a larger question. I'm going to throw it to you right after we come back.
I'll cram for the exam.
Yeah,
thanks.
You've got it. You've got a minute's prep here to figure out what you want to say. We are talking about the arts, specifically about Create Indy. It's a new push to support Indianapolis's cultural districts. My guests are Scarlett Martin, Indianapolis Administrator of Community and Economic Development, Chris Gall, Vice President of Marketing with Visit Indy, and Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Michael Huber. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881, send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or track us down on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Create Indy. It's a fresh push to support Indianapolis's cultural districts. My guests are Scarlett Martin, Indianapolis Administrator of Community and Economic Development, Chris Gall, Vice President of Marketing with Visit Indy, and Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Michael Huber. Before we went to the break, I threw Michael a rather large question that he's had a full 60 seconds to think through all the implications of. And it really was, does the very diversity of our cultural history in some ways work against us? Nashville, has one clear thing that draws people to it in a way that that Indy doesn't, because there's several. We've talked about the jazz scene. You've talked about hip hop. You know, the fact that it was, in the early part of the 20th century, one of the literary centers of America. There are all sorts of strains we could pull upon.
Yeah, so if keep in mind, the explosive growth in Indianapolis happens really more in the 1950s on. We were a city with an identity before then, but the growth pattern here, like Columbus, Ohio, like Nashville, the explosive growth happens a little bit later. And so, not making excuses, but there's not as much maybe of a multi-generational history to draw on. And the question is one that Chris mentioned. Every year we take 100 to 110 business leaders and civic leaders to a different city. Chris has gone before. Mayor Hogsett regularly attends part of the trip. And there's a debate a few years ago in Nashville about this sports and arts question that Amanda, the listener, brought up. And so what we noticed was, I'm oversimplifying, if you were baby boom generation, it was sports versus arts type conversation. Mm-hmm. If you were Gen X or younger, it was, okay, we're already sports, so let's not argue with that. How can we channel that energy that exists? And it's true that it's part of our culture. Going to games is part of our culture already. We're not going to change that, and that has many positive aspects to it. We're also told, as part of this Create Indy collaboration by Live Nation, particularly Dan Kemmer from Live Nation, who's a great guy who books House of Blues and concert venues nationally, but he's based here in Indianapolis, that going to concerts is a part of the culture here. Now, their Live Nation's numbers are really, really good for a certain type of large venue or medium-sized venue. So it's going to concerts, but yes, I'm talking about more mainstream concerts. So people are already going out and going to games. People are already going to concerts. If you could find ways to, and I know this isn't what they're suggesting, but not to shame them for going to sports, but people who are already going out and say, try something different. So for your listeners who are thinking, okay, this is interesting, I would say Do 317, shout out Josh Baker, is an amazing resource. If you just resolve to go out once a month or once every other month and then bring some of your friends who are going to the games with you to try something different, and it could be anything. I went to Treese last Saturday. My wife and I were out for 6 hours. We had the best time, fill in the blank, of the festival or event. That thing where you kind of dread going and then you go and you're like, I am so glad we went out tonight. There is so much of that to offer in this city that we hope to shine more of a light on through these efforts.
How much of that, and I'll throw this to Scarlett first, but it's also Indianapolis really cut its teeth on big events. We know how to get massive numbers of people in and out of venues. We execute those things really, really well. The idea of doing something smaller and at least getting, government support for it, ways to move the people in and out, is one of the barriers, I suspect, to doing something smaller. As you start thinking, okay, where am I going to park? How do I get there? All of those things. So how do we go about reducing those barriers, those things that might be inhibiting people, Scarlett?
So I think one thing with the Music City strategy we're hoping to do is to identify, for one, what types of venues are missing or what types of spaces are missing for people to go to. I think that will also come out in the cultural district strategic planning effort. In each cultural district, there are certain spaces that already exist for performing arts and for music. And for visual arts, but what's missing, you know, what size venues can we promote through economic incentives or through the Create Indie program? What tools do we have in our toolbox to really promote the growth of those types of venues? I think also things like transit will really help and promote those types of events. It really drops a barrier for those folks that are worried about the parking or worried about being out late. They can go to all parts of the city using transit. So that's something that we're excited about.
Chris, how much of this is going to be, how big a difference will the whole transit thing make to this? Because I was thinking, a few nights ago, my wife and I went to see a play that a friend of ours had a role in, and it was at a very small venue, but just figuring out where, part of the reason I came up with the parking thing is we hadn't really thought it through. We get down there and I had to drop her so that we could get in line to get into the thing, and then I spent a good 15-20 minutes just driving around looking for a place to park the car.
We just won a major event for 2030. Cities compete. Mm-hmm. That's how far out we're looking. The transit piece is instrumental in helping Indianapolis stay relative and book these major events that far out into the future. Interestingly enough, and again, Michael and I have talked, and Mayor Hogsett and his team, tourism is an economic development strategy. Many times the first time you get a C-suite executive to the city is for a convention or a major sporting event. They say, wow, I want to send my son or daughter to a school here. I could relocate my business here. I want to open up and do business with Indianapolis. We do know, to your point, though, only 15% of those people who visit Indianapolis are millennials, 40% Gen X, 36% boomer. We need to work collectively as a region to help increase the number of millennials who want to come visit Indianapolis. Transit is a big part of that and an attractant to that. We already have a pretty walkable downtown core, a business district, if you will. But if you want to get out and see something in one of the cultural districts, electric cars and bike share and cultural trail and shared economies. But transit will help embellish that and make it even more navigable as a city as a whole.
We are talking about Create Indy, a push to support Indianapolis cultural districts. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Steve has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Steve, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. I have one comment and one quick question. The question being, I've lived in Indianapolis for 20 years, and I've often been struck and been curious that it appears that there's never been a lot of strong marketing towards our canal system downtown. Being from Texas, I attended many events in San Antonio where they have a beautiful riverfront and canal system that attracts all kinds of tourism and conventions. And it just seems here we don't have much to do when we go to our canal. It's beautiful, but a little difficult to park and not many eating establishments or things that really attract tourism. And then my quick comment is that I moved to Indianapolis to pursue recording. Most people are not aware that Indianapolis is a huge space for recording demos for publishers. And we probably are Nashville's biggest competition in that area. It's a little niche market. I don't even know how you would market that. But Indianapolis actually is the home of the American Federation Musicians Union, number 3. So we're one of the oldest in the country, and we attract many people. Publishers come here to record demos for recordings, and I just haven't heard that mentioned in any of your conversations. So I thought I'd throw out those two things.
Thanks very much for the call, Steve. Michael.
Yeah, quick.
Thank
quick,
you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Steve. Quick hit on both. On the, Chris is more qualified to talk about, the canal as a tourism asset than I am. But I will say the downtown housing is only going to get more dense, and so the opportunities on the canal are only going to increase. They're only going to get more promising with the market and with, you know, more and more young people moving downtown, the growth of IUPUI. So we're I know that its expansion is on the radar. It's something that Scarlett and the city are looking at, so I know that's coming. I would also say the White River being clean as a result of the completion of the Deep Rock Tunnel, that and I think the future impacts of transit that you asked about, John, are two huge changes that we're not talking enough about, myself included. The White River being safe to kayak on and swim in and things like that, and being clearer aesthetically, much cleaner environmentally as a result of redirecting the sewage, is going to be massive. I think you're going to see a tremendous number of new development opportunities and recreational opportunities that are unforeseen really today. About Indianapolis as a place where publishing houses make recordings, and also Federation Number 3, those are two of the assets that I have a little bit of an awareness that Music Cities hopes to highlight. Those are the types of assets that normally aren't in the conversation when we're talking about these big institutions like the Symphony that do a great job for Indianapolis, that we seek to map out and connect with our Music Cities initiative. And we'll be looking forward to reconnecting with Steve to talk about how to get those folks better connected to our efforts.
So I want to ask Scarlett this, because we've talked about this. How are we going to define, even on something, how are we going to define success here? I mean, what are we going to consider success? What are the metrics we're using to try to figure out whether this has all been effective?
So we're still looking to other cities to see how they measure that success. But I think we would want to see growth within those sectors specifically, that we are supporting through Create Indy. And also just we can see through Visit Indy's metrics that they track, visits to the cultural district, visits to our city for different reasons, how those change over time, I think will be indicative of success. And Chris may be able to speak to that a little bit more as well. I did want to mention, to Steve's point, the canal itself is an incredible asset, and the city of Indianapolis is actually right now partnering with Hamilton County Tourism and Visit Indy to do a White River strategic planning process.
Yeah, we did a show on that a few weeks ago.
I thought so, yeah. Yeah. So that is actually an initiative that we hope will identify opportunities for both the canal and the White River as a whole, kind of spanning through Hamilton County and Marion County, to activate that and to make it a true asset for those folks that are living more and more downtown.
Chris.
Yeah, are we retaining the best and brightest, specifically mm-hmm. artists? Are there more people consuming our arts and cultural amenities, from big boxes to little boxes, from the Chatterbox to the Marat, mm-hmm. And are we growing tourism specifically in that millennial? You know, I mentioned earlier, only 15% of those visiting Indianapolis are millennial. We know if you invite them through arts and cultural and concerts, they will come. And to Steve's point, San Antonio, we've studied their Riverwalk. Our canal sets the game from a little bit more tasteful engagement. Right now, visitors are uncertain, other than White River State Park. Can I access the canal? Am I allowed to run along it? We have a handful of hotels and restaurants that have done well, but collectively, Steve's right, we need to do a better job outside of White River State Park to activate the canal, because we know visitors are attracted to water. And the canal, when we test 1,000 images a year with potential visitors and major sporting events, when we show Indianapolis as it relates to sitting on the water, they want to consume that image. They like that ad, and they want to come visit. So we stand to gain when the canal is more tastefully activated.
How long will this take? I mean, to drive home these points, because as you say, no one thinks of Indianapolis as a water city right now, in part because, you know, not just Indianapolis, but Central Indiana turned its back on the White River several generations ago, and we're having to come back and figure out a way to reintroduce the world to the fact that there is a river here. How long do we think that this all will take? I'll start with Michael on that.
I mean, I see some catalytic projects in the next few years that change the way people think about specifically the White River. And so I see some short-term wins and likely a decade. to change that perception. But
so we have you all back here in 2028.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's I mean, I think the wins that we could get in the short term are really tremendous. But I'm also, you know, want to be realistic that it takes a series of wins and changes to really change a narrative.
Scarlett.
So it took over 10 years since the designation of the cultural districts, and now they are well known both in Indianapolis and outside as being key locations to visit. Right now, I think it's very exciting because there's a couple of projects that may jumpstart the activation of different parts of our city. So, for example, the old GM stamping plant site, the development of that over the next 10 years will be incredibly impactful as to how we view the river and its relationship to downtown, as well as the Bottle Works project on the end of Mass Ave. Being able to activate that site will be incredible for the kind of the finish line of what has been a decades-long process in really making Mass Ave a key location to visit, to live, and to do recreational things. So.
Chris.
Other major cities come to visit Indianapolis to see how our playbook has been successful, from sports first and foremost, and now tourism and economic development. And so we should stand proud as a community that other cities do want to emulate us, yet we can't sit idle. And I think with this Create Indy initiative, very authentically, will help raise this tide. And as it relates to the river, I think when Dig Indy is complete, when the White River is clean, 98% clean, and recreationally safe, that's a big point for our city. That's the Pan American Games of present day, because that will attract business and tourism and economic development as a whole.
Gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Jennifer. Again, if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Jennifer writes, love the conversation right now, John. I think Indy's marketing theme should be We Know How to Work, pertaining to our diversity.
I like that. Yeah. No, I mean that again. It's again. I can't emphasize enough. Somebody more creative than I is going to have to come up with this. But you know, there's back to, you know, our friend Michael Kaufman's earlier. If you want to be a part of producing, and this, you know, We Know How to Work would lead to that. And I can't emphasize enough too. It's going to have to be digging through the dirt and finding something that's already who we are. No tagline or slogan is going to make that kind of a difference. But I love it.
So we're getting a little bit close on time. We're getting toward the end of the program. Scarlett, real quickly, could you walk people through again how, if they're interested in applying for one of the grants, or if they just want to get more information about what Create Indy is, where they go to do so?
So my.indy.gov, search Create Indy Fund, and there's a page for that there. If they just want more information, they're free to contact me, Scarlett, S-C-A-R-L-E-T-T, .Martin@indy.gov.
And again, you said that earlier in the program that the first round of applications is the deadline September 17th?
That's right.
And we're looking at probably October before they're announced, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank my guests, Scarlett Martin, Indianapolis Administrator of Community and Economic Development, Chris Gall, Vice President of Marketing with Visit Indy, and Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce Chieftain Michael Huber, for what has been a lively conversation. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.